always correct, as long as you're not talking political correctness. Bob McCowan in Primetime Sports. Now, on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Thursday, January 8th, and this is Primetime Sports. I'm Jeff Blair, sitting in for Bob McCowan, joined by my 4 o'clock co-host, Michael Grange. Elliot Friedman's going to roll in around 5 o'clock. Grange is all done up because he's going to the basketball game tonight. You can do some sideline reporting or some...
No, just a little pregame with Eric Smith, and then a little halftime also with Eric Smith, I think.
Should be interesting. It's Raptors' first of 6 home games after...
Sportsnet's calling me. Should I answer? Or?
Let's see. Who is it?
It's just, I think it's the assignment desk.
It's got a Texas thing. That's a Texas.
No, no, that's a Chilean
oh,
flag.
Oh, Chilean flag. You know who that is.
Oh, no, but that's my own, on my own phone. It's a long story, but...
You're not Chilean.
No, but during the World Cup, my son decided he would support Chile. Okay, so that ended up on my phone. And, of course, do I know how to change whatever pictures on my phone? No, of course not. No.
Dave Schein and...
Anyway,
one day at the World Series, changed my phone to Spanish, like all the languages. 2 days, didn't know how to do it.
No,
yeah, seriously, he did.
But if anyone at Sportsnet is listening, I couldn't pick up the call. I'll talk to you after 5 o'clock.
Yeah, and Grange will be at the basketball game tonight if you need him. The Raptors are playing the Charlotte Hornets. I got a question for you because there are some people weighing in on this on social media today. Tim and Sid were talking about this as well. The move to get Kyle Lowry in the All-Star game, sort of
the momentum,
the organizer, you know, with the prime minister involved and all
Justin
that.
Trudeau had to
Justin
get it.
Justin Trudeau.
Yeah, sure.
I like it. And apparently there are people out there who think this is some sort of affront to humanity and that it's, you know, interfering with the legitimacy of the process. It's an All-Star game. There is no legitimacy to it. It's a game for fans and corporate sponsors, and if people want to get behind Kyle Lowry, I have no problem with that.
Well, especially because he's particularly deserving.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, so, it's not as if, you know, now if you were picking, you know, a guy who wasn't deserving. I mean, if everybody said, let's get behind, let's get behind Gravis Vasquez because he's such a good guy. I might have.
Well, it's one of those things. It's like, how many million Elvis fans can't be wrong, whatever the number is, right? So. Mm-hmm. The reason something like this might take off isn't because, you know, Stephen Harper tweeted about it. It's because there's some merit and there's a perceived need to get behind. Like, it's a worthy cause. I mean, right. I guess that's the simple way to put it. He should be an all-star, whether he gets in by fan vote or by coach's selection. You know, it doesn't matter so much, but it's like, why take the guessing out of the process? And if a Twitter campaign can get it going, it'll only work if people think it's a worthy cause.
Right.
And it is, so perhaps it will.
Plus, you're going to cost Kyrie Irving $9 million, right?
Is that his All-Star bonus?
He's got a Derrick Rose clause. I got to look that up. Apparently, he's got a Derrick.
That's
whatever.
Right. Okay.
What's,
so that,
what,
that's
what
if, if you achieve a certain number of career milestones before a certain age,
okay,
you become eligible for... I would have to, you know, I'll have to go to my CBA 101, but like Derrick Rose triggered by becoming an MVP before a certain age, coupled with it, you need to, there's a few career milestones you have to hit, and then it allows you to be eligible for a larger percentage,
right,
of your team's salary cap, I think is the way it works. But this in the break, I'll look that up and make sure I get that right.
Yeah, this is Pro Basketball Talk on NBC.com, and they have... Kyrie Irving slipped from third to fourth among Eastern Conference guards. It's bad news. Irving is in danger of failing to trigger the Derrick Rose rule. That's putting it lightly. Irving almost certainly won't trigger the Derrick Rose rule, and it will cost him about $9 million. So I guess that's what you were talking about.
Yeah, it's not like it's a bonus or anything out there. It's how much he could potentially earn on his...
Okay, there you go. Yeah, he's got to be named to the NBA, All-NBA first, second, or third team twice. He's got to be voted an All-Star starter twice. He's got to have won an MVP award. So there you go.
I don't think he's in much danger.
He's not going to have much danger.
No.
Anyhow, you can ensure that he's not going to make $9 million if you help Kyle Lowry get in. Now, we'd urge people to get behind it anyhow. It's be fun to see. And you're right. I mean, I think Kyle Lowry probably definitely deserves to go to the All-Star game anyhow. So again, the Raptors will be playing the Charlotte Hornets tonight. I think it's their first of six.
First of six at home, correct.
Six at home after that long road trip. And they should be getting DeMar DeRozan back next week at some point. Just to let you know what we have coming up in the show while Grange is with me, Jim Callis, who's the senior writer for MLB.com, he'll join us at 4:10. The Toronto Blue Jays, apparently, they either have a deal in place to sign, or have serious interest in Vladimir Guerrero Jr., of course, the son of Montreal Expos, former Montreal Expos slugger. So Jim Callis will be along. We'll talk about that. And the deal cannot be made official until, I believe, it's July 2nd. But we know that the Jays have been staying on top of Vladimir Guerrero Jr., so we'll talk to Callis about that. Darren Fletcher, of course, you remember him as a former Blue Jays catcher, also former TV analyst. He caught Pedro Martinez during Pedro's career with the Montreal Expos, and Darren's going to join us at 4:35. We'll talk a little bit about the Hall of Fame. Of course, he also played against John Smoltz and apparently never had an at-bat against Randy Johnson, which I guess Fletcher being a left-handed hitter may make a little sense. 5'10", apparently, Peter Horacek, the interim head coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs, will be along. Not an auspicious start for the Leafs last night. 6-2 loss to Washington. Couple of awful line changes. Couple of meltdowns. We'll talk to Peter Horacek about that. Scott Hartnell will be along. The Columbus Blue Jackets play the Leafs tomorrow. Then Don Banks of Sports Illustrated and Rob Becker, our legal analyst. So as you can tell, we have a jam-packed show, and Friedman's going to be along at 5 o'clock as well to help guide me through, help get me through 5 to 7. Did you watch the game last night, Leafs?
I did not because I was...
That's a shame.
I watched it intermittently. I was here writing about DeMar DeRozan, so...
You could have watched it while you'd written.
I was trying. I was like, what's the score? I'd come over and watch a goal. But I don't have any great observations to offer other than what I've read about the game and the highlights I saw. And
okay, I won't ask you about it then.
Yeah. You can just... I'll listen. I did see Chris Johnson's story, which was interesting.
That was my next point. Our Chris Johnson of Sportsnet penned an article on the website, Roman Polak. Look, there's been a lot said about Phil Kessel and a lot said about the Leafs in the past 4 days, but when you get a guy who's playing on the team, a guy who plays the way Roman Polak plays, a guy who's played for the St. Louis Blues as well, a pretty good organization, when he comes out, as he did with Chris Johnson, and effectively say the reason that the Leafs don't play well defensively is they've got too many players who don't want to play well defensively. They're essentially more interested in scoring goals and preventing goals, which is not going to come as a newsflash, I don't think, to a lot of Maple Leafs fans. But it's interesting when somebody in the dressing room says that. And it's interesting when it's a new guy says that. And it kind of ties in with something I think, Mike, we've slowly gotten the sense about this. And it started with Salutegate, where we're led to believe that one of the few people in the dressing room to stand up and say, guys, this is a stupid idea, was Stefan Robida, the new guy from Dallas. Now you're getting Roman Polak weighing in on this situation. I tend to put more stock in that than I do with the drive-bys from Ron Wilson or the the idiocy from Mike Milbury last night about Phil Kessel being a pain in the ass. And I've got a column going up on the website about it. I mean, anybody who pays any attention to what the worst general manager in the history of the NHL says really needs to have their head examined anyhow. But having said that, it's one thing when you get all those long-distance critics, another thing when you have a guy in the dressing room. And I think attempting to be constructive, saying, look, we've got guys who are just interested in scoring goals. And I don't know. We'll have Peter Horacek. I don't know how you change that. I mean, it's been that way for a couple of years now. I think it's almost in this team's DNA.
Well, and they tried to change the DNA by bringing in people from for their sort of kind of depth positions that could sort of shift the way the team played a little bit and presumably shift. I mean, you don't bring Stefan Robida in, you know, at age 37 and give him a 3-year contract because you're expecting him to, you know, reach career high in point totals, right? Like, you're definitely bringing him in because there's a certain steel to him, apart from the steel that's in his leg, that you hope kind of translates. And Roman Polak also, like, I had a conversation with Daniel Winnick, that, you know, he wasn't quite that specific, and it was actually in the midst of their team of the Leafs sort of starting to get on that roll, and there was, you know, he was sort of saying that there was more of an appetite for the kind of hockey that the nature of the team had changed. And so I think what's interesting now is you've got this crisis, so to speak, where you've got a coach fired, and you know, it's clear that the spotlight's on the room, and fairly or not, a guy like Phil Kessel is kind of been signaled out and fair, like I say, fairly or not, for how he plays the game. And there's kind of going to be a choice made, right? Who is this team going to follow, and why are they going to follow them? And that's kind of, I think, an opportunity for Peter Horacek to sort of kind of leverage that and leverage that kind of voice and lever the, and give those new guys who, it's hard, I think, if you're new to a team and you're not automatically one of the elite players on a team, to kind of influence guys who are embedded there. But, you know, the time is now. This is a chance for a coach to leverage that. It's a chance for players to, everyone's kind of getting a fresh new start here, to speak up and be heard.
Yeah, my concern is that this is just going to become, because it is Toronto, it's just going to become a pile on Phil Kessel thing. And I don't carry any flame, I don't carry any torch for Phil Kessel or anything like that, but you can't tell me, if you've watched this team play, that you think Phil Kessel's the only and the major problem with this team. There are a lot of guys who just aren't playing well. I mean, last night, couple of bad line changes, a couple of changes involving the defenseman Morgan Riley, Jake Gardner. I just think there's so much wrong with this team, or there are so many things not clicking right now with this team, that it's awfully easy to kind of pick on the guy who is least comfortable in front of the camera, the guy who really can't speak up, whether it's to defend himself or the guy who just can't speak up, the guy who can't make his case. And that's my concern is, you know, because I think at the end of the day, unless David Nonis and Brendan Shanahan pull off the trade of all trades, I think at the end of the day, Phil Kessel's going to be here for a while. And it's going to be awfully ugly if it's pile on Phil every single day. Never mind that he's their best player. And you know, my point with Phil Kessel's always been, and I think back, I did the news conference when he was acquired from Boston, and I remember looking at this guy, and I remember writing that this guy doesn't look like he's going to be a good fit in Toronto. He was sweating, he was fidgety. He looked like a kid who just wasn't comfortable in the limelight, who thought, oh my God, all these people are here for me. And I mean, my argument with Phil Kessel has always been he's your most talented goal scorer, but in essence, he's effectively a complementary player. He's a guy who's going to score a lot of goals for you, and he's going to score an awful lot of goals for you if you put him around good line mates. He is not going to be the guy who's going to be your spokesman. He's not going to be the guy to quote unquote step up.
No, that's you're absolutely correct. And I think there's room in every organization. There's room in every team. A good team, you know, a good team, in my opinion, isn't 25 guys, whatever the number of on a team or baseball. 25 guys in lockstep being the same person, right? Because obviously that's impossible. A good team finds a way to kind of accept and kind of put its arms around all the different personalities in your team for the benefit of the group. And so, but this is the curious thing about Phil Kessel, and it's, you know, it was, keep in mind when Steve Spott was quoted saying he wasn't coachable, he sort of had a problem with authority. You know, the artist known as Phil type guy. Nobody ever denied any of that. And so this is the one issue why Kessel does become a lightning rod is it's fine if you're going to produce and maybe play in a way that's not conducive or not that everyone else can't play, right? Like there, people are going to, as Randy Carlyle said at training camp, there is such a thing as double standards in hockey, and it's true in most sports. People who produce get a break here and there. But what's interesting about Phil is if there is that side of his character where he's not only not doing what other guys are doing, but he's undermining the effort. He's undermining the message. He's not, he is kind of doing things his own way, mm-hmm. you know, with a bit of a, you know, an attitude towards what the coaching staff, that, you know, that bleeds into other guys in the room. That creates resentment. That creates creates more challenges than necessary to, you know, for the other 20 guys in the lineup who aren't nearly as good as Phil Kessel and need to play a certain way. So I think that's where it's interesting. That's why he's such an interesting figure in this whole debate.
Yeah, I guess it just, you know, it gets back to I haven't seen anything from Phil Kessel in the past 4 years, however long he's been here, I guess since September 2009, I believe. I haven't seen anything from him that surprises me. This is the player I thought he was going to be.
I would disagree. I mean, he surprised me in that he's a better player than I thought he was going to be.
No, but I mean, I'm not surprised that he is not defensively responsible.
But I am a bit surprised in this idea of him, you know, not knowing him as kind of a kind of rebel in a dressing room, a rebel to authority. And it, you know, the only kind of live example we have of that is that clip from 24/7 last year, you know, good, you know, kind of making fun of the coach. Good one, Randy. You know, that's, I don't know. Does that happen all the time? I'm not sure what that says, but it's kind of a little bit of an insight with all the other information we get that makes you wonder, is he conducive to a team all being on the same page and marching to the same beat?
As I said, Peter Horacek, the head coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs, the interim head coach, will join us at 5:10. So we'll ask Peter. We'll ask him about Phil Kessel, and we'll get Peter's take on it. We've had him on. He's been in this show, and he's been in my show a couple times. He's an honest guy, and I think he's in a position right now where he can afford to be honest based on a situation. So Peter Horacek will join us at 5:10. Want to shift focus to the Blue Jays right now. And a lot of people out there waiting for the Blue Jays to make a move and round out the bullpen. They've been linked with Ichiro, which would certainly be an interesting, open some interesting marketing possibilities for a communications company, I would think, given the fact that he's closing in on a pretty impressive record. But all that aside, a story that got our attention over the weekend and got a lot of people's attention over the weekend for a variety of reasons is this report that the Blue Jays have an agreement in place or may have an agreement in place to sign Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Now, the international free agency window doesn't open up until the summer. I believe it's July 1st or July 2nd. And teams can talk to players up to that point. They can obviously scout players. Players can work out for them. Vladimir Guerrero Sr., of course, a much beloved and a much decorated former slugger. With the Montreal Expos. Jim Callis is MLB.com senior writer. He's one of our go-to guys on all things as they relate to player development, player prospects. Jim Callis joins us on Primetime Sports. Jim, thanks a lot, and a belated Happy New Year to you.
Yeah, Happy New Year to you guys too, Jeff.
So tell me about Vladimir Guerrero Jr. What do I need to know about him other than the bloodlines?
Well, he's got good bloodlines because I think there's, what, four Guerrero brothers played professionally, and I think, what, three in the big leagues.
Mm-hmm.
But, no, I mean, when you think of Vladimir Guerrero Sr., you think of this imposing figure at the plate, and that's what his son is. You're correct. The signing deadline begins July 2, and their national market's kind of crazy, even though they have kind of rules in there now that limit to some extent what teams can spend, although the penalties aren't nearly as severe as they are if you overspend in the draft. Teams, I guess the deals aren't official, but teams agree to deals well in advance of the July 2nd deadline and try to lock guys up so they can figure out how they're spending money. And there have been rumors, I think, going back even to the fall that he was going to get $3.2 million and that the team was going to be the Blue Jays, which is what we're hearing. He's not as much of an all-around player as his dad. I mean, he's a pretty big guy. I think he's 6'2", 220. He may even be bigger than that. He's not as athletic as his dad, but it's like imposing frame for a kid that young, you know, very good bat speed, tremendous power, you know, very high power ceiling on Vladimir Guerrero Jr.
And, yeah, we should mention he's 15 years old. He is listed, and I spoke to someone at the Blue Jays. They have him as 6'2 and 225, which is, you know, obviously 220, 225. He's a big kid. You're right. I guess he's not considered to have the arm that his dad did, and as you say, not necessarily the all-around player. But it seems like this is going to be a pretty interesting international class, isn't it? There's a lot of talk that a couple of teams are going to spend more than their allotment in the international market, and the Blue Jays, in fact, are one of those teams.
Yeah, the way that works, you know, in the draft, I don't know how familiar your listeners are with it, there's spending guidelines each team gets on the draft based on the picks they have, which change a little bit with free agent compensation and the competitive balance round. But the penalties are harsh. If you go more than 5% over your allotted pool in the draft, you lose a first-round draft pick. And if you went 15% over, you can lose two first-round draft picks, which nobody's done. I don't think anybody's ever going to do, certainly not intentionally. But internationally, the penalty winds up being if you blow way past or if you blow past it, the guidelines, you are restricted in how much you can spend on any one particular player the following year. But, you know, you can go crazy. You could essentially get 2 years worth of talent in 1 year. And there's really no reason not to do that if you're enamored of the play. I mean, the Yankees were very aggressive last year. The Red Sox were very aggressive last year. There's a third team I'm forgetting who was aggressive last year. The year before that, the Rangers and the Cubs went way past the guideline. So people really aren't that upset. Okay, you know, I can't sign a big-name player the following season, but if I get, you know, three or four big-name players out of the current crop, I'm ahead of the game. And it sounds like, you know, I mean, once you go past the guideline on the international level, you might as well just keep going because the penalties don't get any harsher. You're not going to lose two first-round picks or anything like that. Although I do think we're headed to an international draft, which I used to think would never happen. But MLB wants one. I bet we'd get an international draft, maybe even starting with the new CBA. And at that point, I think it'll be similar to the regular amateur draft. And then if you go crazy, you'll start losing international draft picks. But as for now, there's really no incentive not to spend if you think the talent's out there.
Yeah, we should mention that the number that has been thrown out there, FanGraphs, and I've seen it other places as well, is in the neighborhood of $3 million for Vlad Jr. Vladimir's father signed with the Montreal Expos for $25,000 or $5,000.
It's amazing, Jeff.
It wasn't much.
If you look at the big league players who come, you know, who are international products, you know, Miguel Cabrera is a rare exception. He was a big money guy, but a lot of the real stars are guys who didn't cost much money at all. That were just the product of scouts who worked real hard and found these guys and signed them. You know, so I mean, the draft. I mean, you could say the same thing about the draft. There's a lot of big, you know, big money players who go bust, but not nearly the same percentage. And I think the big difference is, I mean, these guys are 2 years younger than a typical high school senior, and you're not seeing them against, you know, any kind of quality of competition, you know, in game situations. So there's a ton more projection involved. But, I mean, you know, you see what guys are going for at the major league free agent level. And, you know, if you signed six of Vladimir Guerrero Jr.'s for $3 million or $3.2 million apiece, and one of them was as good as you thought he could be, then it's probably worth it because you control his major league salary for 6 years. And you're talking about a guy you're thinking can hit 30-plus homers at the big league level if he develops into, what do you think he can?
Jim, what's the Blue Jays' track record in this area, like finding these kind of international gems? I guess Echevarria, the shortstop they sent to the Marlins, is the one that comes to mind. But it seems to be like an area that some teams are, I mean, obviously there's some big swings and presumably some big misses, but the Blue Jays haven't got in on the Cuban side of things the way some other teams have. So can you discern a philosophy or an approach that they have compared to other teams?
I don't know if anything stands out in particular compared to other teams, that they're more aggressive or less aggressive. I mean, you know, when you mentioned Hecheverria and, you know, you look at Franklin Barreto, who just got traded, it seems like they've traded a lot of the guys they spent big money on. And, you know, I mean, that's not a bad way to go either. I mean, the tricky thing when you're signing these guys at 16 is even the best players, best international guys, you're signing 16, they're 5 or 6 years away from the big leagues at least. So you're talking about way down the road before you get a return. A lot of times you can use these guys as assets. I mean, probably the best international guy in their system, and I think he has a chance to be pretty good, is Roberto Osuna, who got hurt and has come back from Tommy John surgery, who they got out of Mexico. But, you know, I mean, they've been – I mean, I think they're – I'd kind of characterize them, you know, if you're ranking them on the aggressive to less aggressive scale, well, more towards the aggressive end. I mean, they've spent seven figures on a number of guys, but there's still – a number of those guys are still now, you know, 17, 18, mm-hmm. 19 years old. It's going to be 3 or 4 years before we hear about something, you know, like Alberto Torrado and Jairo Laborde and guys like that. I mean, it's still a ways away. Dawa Luga is another guy who is a big-name guy. So they've gotten these guys, but because of the nature of what they are, you're looking at 4, 5, 6 years before these guys get close to the big leagues.
Jim Callis is MLB.com senior writer. He joins us on Primetime Sports. There has been some talk about the Blue Jays and Ichiro Suzuki as well. I don't, you know, we... Quite frankly, I don't think we have a handle on how much money the organization actually has to spend, let alone what Ichiro wants. But let me ask you this. What do you think Ichiro has left?
Not a ton, to be honest with you. I mean, I think Ichiro, I mean, what's he going to be, 41 this year? I mean, shoot, 50-year-old Ichiro could probably hit 275. But, I mean, even in his prime, he wasn't the guy who drew a lot of walks or hit for a ton of power. And it's one thing when you're hitting 330, then okay, you know, your on base percentage is, you know, 380 and you're slugging 430, but now it's, you know, the on base percentage isn't quite what you want. I mean, there's not really any power. I don't think, you know, I'm just popped up his numbers on Baseball Reference. I think he's topped a 700 on base plus slugging only, or he hasn't since 2010. Mm-hmm. So I don't think he's got a whole lot left. I think it's more of a, I mean, you're kind of witnessing the twilight years of a great player. To me, if you're talking about a team that's hoping to contend like the Blue Jays are, you know, I mean, I don't know if I'd really bring him in because I don't think, you know, he's a guy you want to give a lot of at-bats to. And then, I mean, not that he's going to be a bad guy on the bench, but, I mean, you need the distraction of here's Ichiro playing twice a week coming off the bench. So, I mean, if I'm the Blue Jays, I'd go with, you know, Saunders, Pompey, Bautista. You know, I like Kevin Pillar as a fourth outfielder. I don't really think I need Ichiro added to that mix.
The one, as you go through the Blue Jays prospect list, one name that kind of has jumped out a little bit is Miguel Castro, right-handed pitcher. He pitched in Vancouver, I believe. Have you had a chance to kind of go over any of his minor league numbers or collect any thoughts on him? There's been some talk.
Yeah, he's a guy I should have mentioned internationally. He wasn't one of their big ticket signings, but he's a guy who really kind of jumped on the scene this year. I haven't seen him in person, but I mean, he's a guy who, I mean, it's easy to dream on him. I mean, he's 6'5". I mean, there's still room to add strength. And even though there's room to add strength, I mean, he was mid-90s and touching 98, 99 this year. Yeah, I mean, he's still kind of in that, you know, more thrower than pitcher stage, which is fine because he was 19 this season. You know, he's working on a breaking ball and a changeup and in command. But in terms of, I mean, the Blue Jays have a lot of really interesting pitchers in their system. He probably, you know, even counting guys like Daniel Norris, Aaron Sanchez, you know, Jeff Hoffman has come back from Tommy John, Roberto Osuna's come back from Tommy John, Miguel Castro might have the best pure arm strength of any of them. I mean, he's probably still a good 3 years or so away from the big leagues. But I'm sure whenever they're talking trade to teams, that they're talking blockbusters, teams are trying to find a way to get Miguel Castro in those deals because he's definitely a guy who's been noticed this year.
Yeah, and one of the things the Blue Jays did do is they promoted him to Dunedin, to their high A affiliate. And I mean, there were points this year where he was facing guys who were 4 years older than him. And, you know, he still managed to get some strikeouts, and because his whip in the Florida State League, very short time, mind you, but it was 0.81, so he clearly wasn't overmatched.
No, and he's a guy, I mean, it's early. I mean, we're only in January. It's not July yet, but mm-hmm. I mean, there's a guy that I'm hoping we see in the Futures game at the All-Star game. I mean, I'd love to see him pitch. I'll have to admit, I don't make it to Vancouver for the Northwest League too often, but I hope to see that guy in spring training at some point, and definitely in the futures game.
Hey, Jim, we appreciate you joining Primetime Sports today.
Hey, no problem. Good talking to you guys. Thanks.
Take care. It's Jim Callis, MLB.com senior writer. He actually employed me at one point.
He employed you.
He's a freelancer for Baseball America when he was running the ship.
There you go.
$50 a week, U.S. That was
Back
then it was, that would be 1989. That was okay.
Yeah.
It was okay. It was beer money.
It always feels good.
It does. That's one thing you never...
those U.S. dollars.
It was great. I mean, those were the heydays because the internet wasn't around. I was doing USA Today's Daily Notes, Baseball Weekly's weekly package, Sporting News weekly package. These guys, it was great.
You found it a little time to do your own job once in a while?
Every now and then. We're going to continue to focus on baseball. Darren Fletcher. You remember Darren Fletcher, former Expos, former Blue Jays catcher, actually joined the Expos along with John Wetland in a trade from the Los Angeles Dodgers. Darren had the opportunity to catch Pedro Martinez when they were together in the Montreal Expos. Pedro Martinez in the Hall of Fame. He also played against John Smoltz in the Hall of Fame. Darren Fletcher was also a teammate of Carlos Delgado's. Carlos Delgado did not get the necessary 5% of the vote to remain on the Hall of Fame ballot. We'll ask Darren Fletcher about that. We'll also get his take on Pedro Martinez. I guess I was going to say Darren Fletcher got to see Pedro Martinez before he really was Pedro Martinez. Darren Fletcher will join Primetime Sports when we continue on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Network.
Did Bob McCown just say what I think he said? You can rewind Primetime Sports Podcast when you subscribe at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand. On demand. On demand. On demand.
Welcome back to Primetime for January 8th. McCown's going to be in on Monday, so don't worry about it. Michael Grange is my co-host for another few minutes, and he's going to run and get ready to do the basketball tonight. And Elliot Friedman will come in. Friedman must be doing hockey, though, tonight, too. There's got to be hockey someplace. Anyhow, Elliot will join us at 5 o'clock. Peter Horacek, the head coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs, the Toronto Maple Leafs interim head coach, will join us at 5:10. As if there's much to talk to. Poor Peter Horacek. But I'm sure he knew what he was getting into. Anyhow, well, what are you going to do? I mean, they ask you to be the interim head coach. You're
not the only question I...
Oh, no.
The one question I would have is, when you signed as an assistant coach, did you have some kind of escalator if you become the head coach? I always wonder about those little things.
I'd like to think that his agent would put that in. So the Hall of Fame is inducting four members this year: Randy Johnson, Pedro Martinez, John Smoltz, and Craig Biggio. Mike Piazza and brain cramp. Mike Piazza just missing it. Piazza, Bagwell, Reigns. So they're kind of in a group of people who may get in, who have a shot at getting in the next couple of ballots. Pedro Martinez didn't get. Well, he didn't get as much support as I thought he would. He still got over 90%, but I figured that there would be I thought that his vote total and Randy Johnson's vote total would be a lot closer. I don't even think it's the whole thing. He played in Montreal because obviously he played in Boston. He did win his first Cy Young in Montreal, but he's also played in Boston. So I don't think you can say that Pedro Martinez necessarily labored in anonymity in Montreal. But when he was with Montreal, one of his teammates was Darren Fletcher. And, of course, you know Darren Fletcher. We all remember Darren Fletcher as a former Blue Jays catcher, former broadcaster. And I remember him. First time I met him was as a Montreal Expos catcher after joining the team from Philadelphia. Darren Fletcher joins Primetime Sports. Hello, Mr. Fletcher.
Hello, Mr. Blair. How are you?
I'm fine. You're with myself and Michael Grange of Sportsnet as well, is alongside me.
Michael.
Darren.
Pedro Martinez. First thing that comes to your mind when I mention that name.
Well, intimidator, I guess, when he was pitching. But he was a bit of a, I think around the league, he was a bit of an enigma, though, because in the, you know, when he pitched, he was such an intimidator. But, Jeff, you know as well as I do, when he was in the clubhouse, he was had a youthful enthusiasm that you would not consider him at all being someone that would be able to intimidate Major League Baseball players with his personality. You know, so he really turned into someone different when he took the mound. But, you know, good for him. I don't know if you'd agree with me, you guys agree with me or not, but I would take Pedro. I'd match up 1997 Pedro Martinez against anyone, honestly, in the history of the game. That year that he had in 1997, he was the most dominating pitcher I have. You know, I've caught Roger Clemens in 98 in Toronto, and he had, he had a kind of a rough month in 98. I don't know what he was, maybe 4-3 or something, but he really turned it on, and that was a great performance he had. But from start to finish, Pedro in 97 was one of the most dominating, or I thought one of the most dominating performances as a pitcher that you've seen in a long time. What was he, Jeff? I can't remember. Was he 19-1 or something?
I'm just looking for it. I know that his ERA was, it was the ZRA that was obscene, but I mean, he overmatched
everybody, and one of the, I think he would have won 20 games, but if you can remember, he had a perfect game going in San Diego.
We lost it in the 10th inning.
The only problem is we didn't score any runs ourselves. It was 0-0 in 10 innings.
That's right.
So, I mean, that was a, he got, ended up getting a no decision, but that should have been a, that should have been at least, I believe, check if I'm wrong, though, but I believe that would have been, if he would have won that game, I think he would have had 20 wins.
He only had
19 that year.
Yeah, 98 he had 19. 97 he had 17. It was 17-8, but his ERA was 1.90, which is just, which is outrageous. At that time, and he was, you know, he was pitching in a team that, as you said, at times struggled to score runs. He had 13 complete games that year, by the way.
Wow.
13 complete games in 1997.
17 wins. How many losses did he have?
He had 8. You know what? I think he lost 2 complete games.
Yeah,
Darren,
he was dominating in 97. I thought,
as a catcher, when you've got a guy like him, and you caught Clemens too, as you mentioned. And they are intimidating. Part of their game is to scare guys in the batter's box. Does it put a little pressure on you as a catcher? What kind of mess you might be getting yourself into?
as far as if he gets hit or something.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, Pedro, if you can remember, I can't. I think it was 96. I think it was 96 or maybe it was 95. You know, he hit a bunch of guys, and we were fighting all the time. One of those years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I. You know, I as a catcher, you've got, and I think it's true from the dawn of time in baseball, is that you've got to be able to throw the fastball inside to big league hitters, and that's something that big league hitters do not want you to do either. So, in my opinion, I think there's a constant fight in Major League Baseball to control the inside part of the plate. Pitchers want to control it, the hitters want to control it. So, with that, and Pedro wanted to control that certain part on the hitter. And he would do whatever it had to take to take that part away. And he was going to pitch inside. And if that meant crowding you, hitting you, so be it.
Darren Fletcher joins Primetime Sports. Darren, when Pedro arrived in that trade for Delino DeShields, and there was a lot of talk from the Dodgers people that they just didn't know what to make of him. They thought he was too slender to be a starting pitcher. There was some concern about whether or not he'd be able to maintain his delivery consistently. Even the Expos, I think Dan Duquette will tell you that there was some thought at one point that this guy may end up being a closer. I mean, that quickly went out the window. But what were people saying about Pedro the first year he got there?
Well, I mean, I know the history because I knew his brother very well.
Mm-hmm.
I came up with his brother Ramon, and Ramon was much taller. And I think the narrative in L.A. was the fact. He throws similar, he throws harder, but can his arm hold up because he has a smaller stature? And he really, really has his arm dragged behind him and his front of his and his chest really leaned forward, which created that tremendous whip that he had, and it also created that tremendous deception that he had with his changeup. But I think the Dodgers were concerned that it would his arm hold up. Ramon obviously was much taller. And I think there was a concern too, Jeff. I honestly think they thought that he was a little bit more, maybe a little bit too emotional, because if you can remember, Ramon, his brother, is the complete opposite.
Mm-hmm.
Ramon Martinez, now pitched, you know, 10-plus years in the big leagues. Ramon was very reserved, very calculating, very not very impulsive person, where Pedro, you know, wore his feelings on the sleeve when he pitched. And I think they were a little concerned about that, and they didn't know whether or not he could hold up as a starting pitcher. And I believe he was in the bullpen for a majority of his L.A. career.
You remember the incident with Reggie Sanders? He's working on a perfect game. He's 0-2 in the eighth inning on Reggie Sanders. Hits him, and Reggie Sanders ends up charging the mound.
He ends up charging the mound in a perfect game. I remember that scrum. That was a good one. He had a perfect game going. My favorite Pedro Martinez story, though, is I think we were playing. It might have been when Derek Bell, I believe he might have been playing with San Diego.
Right.
And it was in Montreal. And Pedro was just making everybody look silly the whole game. You know, he would throw up and in, down and away. He was striking out a lot of guys, and Derek Bell, I was catching, and Pedro threw, you know, a nasty curveball for strike one that just jelly-legged his knees. And then the next pitch, he threw at his head and knocked him down, and he had to brush off, and they had a little staring match. The next pitch, he proceeded to throw two more breaking balls to jelly-leg him with no swing for strike three. And then as he's walking back to the dugout, Bip Roberts goes, "Charge his ass!" Then he took off from about halfway from the dugout and charged him. And I didn't even see it. I got caught looking off to the side. Next thing you know, Derek Bell's charging from the dugout, Pedro Martinez after a strikeout.
Darren Fletcher.
So it was, that's the kind of reaction you got from him, because at times he could make you look so silly. And Pedro wasn't afraid to shoot you a dirty look now and again either.
No, Pedro would stare you down.
Yeah.
Pedro was the one pitcher I honestly expected to see him charge the plate at one point.
Yeah, he wasn't afraid to fire a dirty look at you. He wasn't afraid after he strike you out to kind of have his head kind of slowly still looking at you as he turns his back to receive the ball from around the horn.
Mm.
Darren, when you came from Montreal, you end up here in Toronto, and you get to see the beginning of, you know, arguably the best career a Blue Jays ever had, Carlos Delgado. You know, you go over some of those numbers, and again, Jeff and I were talking. I don't know if he's a Hall of Famer, but I can't believe that only 4% of Major League Baseball writers thought he deserved to be on that Hall of Fame ballot. What was it like watching this guy just explode onto the Major League scene?
Well, he was a catcher when he first came up, and, you know, as far as just pure strength, he was incredibly strong, you know, right-hand thrower, a left-handed hitter, you know, hit the home run at anywhere in the park, you know. As a left-handed hitter, I've seen him hit a lot of home runs to left center and right down the left field line, and then, of course, when he pulled the ball, he would hit it out of sight. But not only a lot of power, but just an excellent average hitter too. I just at times I remember watching Carlos hit, and I would just say to myself, there's no way that this guy has any chance at all on if he gets him out, it's because Carlos is going to hit the ball hard at somebody. You know, you could just tell that when he was locked in, he was going to hit the ball hard somewhere. So,
hey, Fletcher,
you know, he was one of the most professional guys you'd ever run into, too, took the game seriously. I was surprised too. He's eligible, and he didn't get many votes.
No,
yeah, no, Fletch. Jason Stark said that Carlos Delgado was the best player in history to get booted off the Hall of Fame ballot after his first year, and I think he's right. Darren, thanks so much for doing this. Always great to talk to you, Darren Fletcher, joining Jeff Blair and Michael Grange on Primetime Sports. You got to go do some basketball.
Yes,
Elliot
sir.
Friedman's going to take your place. Thanks for doing this, Mike.
Thank you, Jeff.
Back with more Primetime on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Network.